Hello, and welcome to the Screaming Into the Mic podcast, a medium normalizing the expression of women's anger. Soraya Chimali writes, "Gendered ideas about anger make us women question ourselves, doubt our feelings, set aside our needs, and renounce our own capacity for moral conviction. This podcast is where I take a stand and say no more through creating a safe space for women to share their rage in a public forum. I'm your host, Mary Abdelmalek Neal. I'm a musician, community developer, and feminist activist. Join us for each episode as we talk with women about the struggles they face in work and life. We begin this podcast this season chatting with women in the arts. Thanks for tuning in. For this episode, we're excited to welcome Ellie Anglin. Uses the pronouns she, her. Ellie is a multimedia artist and writer. Her artwork is primarily in collage, illustration, stop motion animation, and zines. Her work deals with themes of queerness, feminism, grief, nature, and pop culture. She lives and works in Kitchener with her wife, son, and two cats. For more information about Ellie, you can find her link in the show notes. This is Screaming Into the Mic. Welcome, Ellie, to the show.
Thank you.
It's so great to have you here. I'm very excited to hear more about your practice and let our listeners know what you're up to.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. So that being said, let's just jump right in and tell our listeners a little bit about your artistic practice.
Sure. So my name is Ellie Anglin, and I am a multimedia artist. I find that title to be the most apt because I do all sorts of things. I do visual art, I do writing, I do performance art, I do installation, but primarily I work in visual art, writing, and making zines. I've been practicing for probably around 20 years, but I kind of feel like we're all born artists. So in a way, I feel I've been doing this my whole life, but maybe only have been calling myself an artist for 15 years.
Okay, awesome. And have you been primarily in the KW area, or what would you describe, I guess, yourself in terms of the KW? Do you feel like you're a transplant here, that you're like, this is your home? Tell me what you feel about this community.
Yeah, it's definitely my home. I was born in the States, actually, but just by happenstance, because my dad was teaching there at the time. But my parents came back with me when I was about 8 months old. So I've pretty much lived here my entire life. I grew up in Waterloo, and I did move to Toronto to sort of like sow my wild oats in my mid-20s. 4 years of mayhem in the big city, mm-hmm. and then came back home and met my wife, and we've really settled here in Kitchener, and I love it here. Now, you know, I used to feel like there wasn't enough of a kind of arts culture here, but I feel like with lots of different influences have like kind of converge to create a really great culture here that I'm finding more and more, and I'm really happy here and will probably stay here for the rest of my life.
Oh, that's really exciting.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, that's awesome. So speaking of the arts community here, like, how did you find your place here? Like, helping, like, this, I'm hoping people are also listening that are kind of coming here that are new to the area, there may be artists that are trying to find their footing here. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about how you kind of found that community.
Yeah, I think that, you know, aside from finding like-minded friends and artists at school, especially I would say university, I went to U of W and I did the English literature, and I made a lot of friends who were also interested in creative writing. And also, I was involved at the Women's Center at the time there. I think it might have a different name now, I'm not sure. But sort of people involved in activism, feminism, and that, and so, and also a lot of like kind of intersections of queer folks coming together. That's where I properly got into making zines. But also with going to university came a lot of late nights, lots of drinking, and I used to hang out a lot at Jane Bond in Uptown Waterloo.
Okay.
And it will sound odd because it's a bar, but there was like just such a strong community of artists who hung out there, worked there, showed their art there. And I met a lot of people who were doing art at the time. So that sort of started it. And then I think a lot of people who I knew from that community continue to work and live in KW. Now I live in Kitchener, so I find that a lot of the arts community that I kind of interact with seems to revolve around a lot of businesses in downtown Kitchener as well.
Okay.
One that's like been significant for me is the Yeti, because the owner of the Yeti is super supportive of artists, and everyone who works there seems to be a really interesting artist, and they have shows there and they have sales there. And the person who owns the Yeti also runs the studio that I work out of as well. So,
we're getting the inside scoop now.
Yes.
We're going to go in town. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
That person's name is Vic Kent. Just want to give her a little bit of recognition because she creates so much great culture in town.
Love it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Speaking of which, let's dive in a little bit on the themes of your art, because you were talking a little bit about how your work in the volunteering at UW was in feminism and activism. Like, tell us a little bit about the themes around your art that you work on.
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't call myself necessarily a political artist, but I do think that almost everything I do has some sort of political message or a political leaning, just because of who I am. And I think making art or making a statement as a queer person and as a feminist, you're almost always going to be saying something that is in some way challenging, I guess, mainstream values or the majority values.
Yeah.
So I think I incorporate words a lot into my art. So I do a lot of collage work, and it seems to always kind of incorporate words, which really fits with my background in English literature. But so a lot of those words are like almost sort of slogans or little statements, and they really, you know, often have either like a political or an emotional meaning behind them. But I try to inject humor as well, so it's not like super dry or didactic.
And can you give us like an example of one of your pieces with and give us a bit of that meaning, that sort of like background based on your perspective into that art?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was in 2015. There was an amazing arts festival that happened downtown. Sadly, it's not happening anymore. But Eric Rumble, who is another amazing community organizer in town who's really involved in the arts scene, ran with, I'm sure, with lots of help from other people, but a really great festival called Night Shift. And he commissioned me to do a huge, large-scale felt banner. It hung on the side of a building downtown. It used to be Gowdy's department store.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, and at the time it was J&P Grocery. And it was a gigantic banner that said, "Resist Psychic Death" on it. Oh, nice. And so I got that quote from a Bikini Kill song. And they're a fabulous band from the early 90s Riot Girl movement. They kind of really, I would say, probably the band that most represents Riot Girl. And they were really active in zine culture as well. And all their music is about like fighting the patriarchy and resist psychic death. It's sort of like, you know, don't lose that spark that you have when you're a kid or a teenager. And you're like fighting against the man and questioning everything and questioning authority, and don't just become complacent and accept things the way they are. Keep your mind alive and think for yourself, I guess. And that quote kind of worked with the style that I did, which is very like crafty, kind of like... some of my art is almost like dollar store art because I use a lot of like really cheap materials, because I think, as I said earlier, like I kind of think we're all artists. It's just that it's something that has been made into an elite thing by, I'll say it, you know, old white men who want to, you know, have power over art. And, you know, so I kind of incorporate cheap materials and more like of domestic art practices that are sometimes associated more with craft than with fine art.
I'm 100% with you. I make instruments out of junk.
Nice. So.
I totally get your
That's
vibe.
Great. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. So then this banner was hanging outside of JMP.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what was the response that you...
Oh, it was great. I felt there was a great response. It was only... I think it was just up for one night, but it was really cool to see how huge it was. And, like, it was 15 feet tall. And we had to use, like, a pulley system to get it up.
And that's awesome.
Yeah. And then we had lights shining, like these sort of psychedelic lights shining on it. Mm. And yeah, I think I had really positive feedback.
That's awesome. Yeah,
thanks.
And has that banner been up in other places?
No, it's been like basically going moldy in my trunk ever since.
Oh, no. Well, we have to figure out.
I'm carrying it around just in case.
We got to figure out a way to get it back up there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Thank you.
I'm going to bring in a quote, as I tend to do in our episodes here, and this one's from Gloria Steinem. Mm-hmm. She recalled that as a feminist, she was often called many things over her lifetime. She noted, if someone called me a lesbian, I said, thank you. It disclosed nothing, confused the accuser, conveyed solidarity with women who are lesbians, and made the audience laugh. I'm wondering, what has your experience been establishing yourself as an artist in this community and broadly as a feminist queer artist?
Interesting. I think that I overall think that as a white and cisgender, although that sometimes is a little bit fluid for me, but generally like a female... cis female passing queer person who, you know, I have a pretty heteronormative family setup. Like, I'm married with a baby. I feel I have had a very easy time being queer in this community. Mm-hmm. I think it's much harder for people who are not white or people who are trans, people who are poor or living... unhoused. So I really recognize that my privilege in that. It's been quite easy for me. And I also see from when I was just coming out in probably early 2000s how much better it's gotten. With that being said, I did experience, you know, I was... I'm not sure why this is coming up so much, but the the Women's Center at U of W, we did a lot of like loud protesting. We were young and spunky, and I remember at the time someone had written in the student newspaper, the imprint there, that, you know, we were a bunch of screaming banshees in there, and used the term feminazis to describe us. And so it's like, I guess it's based on gender and definitely the implication of queerness in there too, but I definitely don't like the term feminazi. It's offensive on so many levels, but yeah, calling us screaming banshees is cool. I don't mind that. I definitely don't mind that. Because I think a banshee is a kind of witch, and I more and more identify as a witch as the older I get. But then again, I think that there's a growing, really scary kind of movement that hates queer people, and especially trans people, who are trying to take away our rights by sort of using children as a scapegoat, saying that trans and queer people are harming. There was a really messed up protest in downtown Kitchener that were I think at least two groups, but I would say using religion as a kind of facade to just, you know, promote hatred. And it's against, because they believe that we're teaching, or that the Ontario curriculum is encouraging children to be trans, which is absolutely false, and just a deflection tactic. But and there was an amazing turnout of all these incredible activists and allies who came out to counter protest. And I would say that in KW, I would say the people who accept queer and trans people far outweigh the people who are homophobic or transphobic, but just having that presence is such a bummer. I know for myself and people I know, it has kind of, just hearing about the protests, seeing all the posts about it, it dampens your creativity and your life spark.
And it's oppressive.
It is oppressive, absolutely, yeah.
And that, of course, will impact your ability to be creative.
Definitely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh. And especially when you have a child, it's like, and they're kind of like attacking, in a way, attacking children, because if they are spreading, you know, the idea in schools, and kids are hearing like, oh, there's this strange movement happening, and then they notice, hey, this kid in my class has two moms or two dads, or their parents non-binary, this kid is non-binary or trans, like, they'll start being singled out even more and targeted more, I think, potentially, and it's a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, that incident that happened at UW in the classroom, and not just that, but I just saw, came up on my feed that at one of the high schools locally, they either burned or trampled a pride flag and started bullying a group of children who were openly, who were openly like homosexual. And I can't imagine how you find your way in something like an artistic practice when you're just trying to find your way through life.
Yeah. So true.
I couldn't wrap my head around how you would be able to, or maybe that is how you find your artistic practice, because you are finding your identity in that mechanism.
It's both, for sure. Yeah. I think just like any kind of self-care or coping mechanisms that you use to deal with trauma and your taking care of your mental health, it's when you get bogged down in negativity and oppression, it's harder to access those things. But if you can push through and continue to do art or go to therapy or take your meds or have a bath, then it does help. And it can really get you back to a place where you feel a bit more under control of yourself.
And do you have, other than those suggestions that you that you came up with, do you have any suggestions for artists who are kind of feeling that bogged down feeling in the middle of all this? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of this going on right now.
Yeah.
Especially when we're talking about our queer and trans community. There's a lot of that. The word conversation isn't the right word for it.
Yeah.
That sort of, there's some level of hostility in the conversation that is happening.
There is, absolutely. And I find, I know for myself, when there, when the protests happened, I did not feel safe going because I had my son and he's one. And I would hate for him to even unconsciously be subjected to any kind of hate against our family at this age. So
yeah.
I didn't go. And I do think that was the right decision, but then I felt so isolated. Mm. And I also, you know, was watching the protest from via social media, and which only shows you kind of generally like pretty polarized viewpoints. Whereas I think these issues are, like all human things, are nuanced.
Yeah.
And then when I actually got out, for instance, yesterday I was at the library and at Kitchener Public Library, and where I work, and there were my colleagues had a bunch of art up in the staff room and things, lots of stuff encouraging, you know, celebrating identity of all kinds, and celebrating a healthy and accurate means of finding information, such as like finding out about the curriculum rather than just going by what you hear online about what they're
right,
what they might be teaching, because they're really not teaching the kids, like, you know, that
you mean actually informing yourself?
Yeah. There was an awesome like book display, like front and center of all about trans people's stories, and it was so wonderful to see that in a community that, and there are lots of different people who use the library, and no one has expressed any problem with that representation. And
that's just very heartening.
Yes. Just to remember that there are some people who feel that way. I think they're a minority, and I think they're organized by some people in power who might have, I don't know, ulterior motives, I'll say. And then I think a lot of people who might question it or follow it or be interested in it aren't actually really hateful. And, you know, hopefully there aren't that many of many of them that people that feel that way.
Right.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so, too. It's it's often that we just hear the loud voices, right? So if the people protesting are the loud voices, that's what you end up hearing.
Yeah.
Even if it isn't a majority group, which is always very frustrating. Mm-hmm. You did mention a few things like the Yeti and the Kitchener Public Library. Is there other places, like inclusive places, that artists can find resources and information? Like, where would you, or community, where would you direct queer and trans artists to go in KW?
Well, I wouldn't say I know all that much about this yet. I'm going to an open house this weekend, but I think the people who seem most visible at the protest, the counter protest, where a lot of people who I recognize from the Land Back movement.
Okay.
And I would say that's a group of local Two-Spirit and queer Indigenous people who are doing amazing work in our city to fight for a lot of groups, but specifically making space for queer and Two-Spirit Indigenous youth. And they recently have obtained a space in downtown Kitchener, which I'm so excited about, called the Willow River Center. I don't have a link right now.
No, that's okay. We can always include it in the show notes.
Okay, that'll be great. Yeah, but I would say they're one of the most kind of interesting, exciting groups. They seem to be, there are a lot of artists involved, and I think that's a really awesome resource. KW Famous is always doing really great stuff, and I feel that they really strive to be inclusive and representative of the local arts community.
Those are some great resources, plus all the ones that you've already mentioned. That's great. Thank you. Yeah. And we'll definitely include links
so that
people can find that information. All right. So tell our listeners, what's on the horizon for you? How can they find you? How can they engage in your work?
Awesome. Thank you very much. So my work can be found at my website, which is ellieanglin.com. And I also have a shop on there where I'm selling some of my wares, but I'm also going to be in quite a few markets this year, so you can find out which markets I'm going to be on there. On Instagram, I have my main account, which is Ellie Anglin. I also have started a little kind of side Instagram account of art that's kind of throwaway that I might not use for anything, but I want to share, and that's called Kitty Doodles 666.
I love it.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Thank you. And I'm currently working on a zine that is a part how-to manual for people, queers who want to have a family and don't know maybe where to start. And also it's also kind of a very short graphic memoir, and that's called Reproduction, and I'm hoping it will probably be out in the next year.
Oh, that's exciting.
Thank you so much.
That's amazing. Well, Ellie, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all of your experience and your knowledge and resources for people, and we look forward to seeing what you're going to be working on in the future.
Thanks, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us for this conversation. To learn more about how to connect with our guests, as well as resources mentioned during the episode, check out the show notes. If you are enjoying this podcast and are a woman local to the region of Waterloo looking for a safe place to release your anger, check out our Facebook group, Screaming Into the Void Waterloo Region. The link is in the show notes as well. Don't forget to tune in for our next episode as we continue to explore the journey of women in the arts.